with the Diocesan Christchurch Diocese archivist, Trina Ducey, and with Chris Jones here at an exhibition of, what do you call it, Saints and Coffee Jars. Saints and Coffee Jars is the name, in the Arts Centre of Christchurch. It's fascinating, and that's why I decided that I'd get these two people together to chat about it. Chris, introduce yourself.
Well, kia ora. My name is Chris Jones. I'm an associate professor at the University of Canterbury in the History Department. My specialism is medieval history.
So how did you get caught up in this?
Well, it's two things, really. It's the combination of saints in coffee jars, because a number of those saints are medieval saints, a number of them are early modern saints, so areas that I'm particularly interested in teaching. But also, many of those saints are brought to Christchurch by Bishop John Grimes, the first Catholic bishop, and the university holds his book collection. So I have an additional element there, because the university has, I think in total, something like 4,000 of his books. And this is a way of sort of bringing some of those books back into context. And
now, I heard you say some of this on the Radio New Zealand podcast, and I'm going to put a link to that podcast so that people get the best of both worlds.
Wonderful.
I was amazed to know that the University of Canterbury has this book collection.
Well, yes, we've held it since 1980. It's an absolutely fascinating collection. At least 80 of the books are now part of our rare books collection, and quite unusual.
And they're not just religious books?
They're not just religious books. There's a huge range of books. The bishop had, he had a particular interest in natural history. Mm-hmm. So we have his books dealing with things like seashells, which he was particularly interested in. But he also has books that cover law, books that cover just a very wide range of history.
Did you say, 5,000 books?
Just under 5,000, yes.
Well,
total.
Great. Look, we'll come back to that, Chris. Trina, you probably need no introduction to Food for Faith listeners.
Kia ora. This is Trina, the archivist with the Catholic Diocese of Christchurch.
And this is Trina's day job.
Yes. Looking after the memory of the diocese, and I'm just very fortunate that Chris was engaged and wanted to spread the word.
Great. So we're recording actually in the middle of the exhibition at the moment, and as you're listening, you'll hear people in the background. It sounds very echoey. The sound quality could be terrible, but it still means you get the chance to hear these two together. So as I arrived in to have a look at the exhibition myself, Chris and Trina were both here. So it's perfect. So whose initiative was this exhibition? How did it start?
It's very much a joint one. When the relics were first discovered in 2021 with the deconstruction of the cathedral, Ollie Lewis, a reporter from the spin-off, I'll give you the link later, he actually did research, which is unusual for a reporter, and part of his research was talking to Chris, and he brought him to the archives, and together we decanted the coffee jars, and from there we kind of built up.
So can we go back to these coffee jars? So these coffee jars were buried?
Yes, they were buried in the 1970s. Father Kevin Clark, who's the former diocesan archivist, saw an opportunity when the church was being reordered, when the cathedral was being reordered, to place the relics in these jars in a secure container, and they were buried under the Chapel of the Blessed Sacrament.
And it seems part of Kevin's reason for doing that was in the changes after the council, relics which had become a focus, they weren't abandoned, but they were decentralised, and I fear that many of these relics across the world just simply got tossed out. But Kevin knew that they were precious, and so he saved them by putting them in coffee jars, hence the name of the exhibition, in a container, and they were saved under the tabernacle in the Blessed Sacrament Chapel.
In the Blessed Sacrament Chapel, buried in there, and in the deconstruction, then we recovered them.
It's a fascinating case. I think you're right. You mentioned Vatican II there, and there isn't really a theological change in attitude towards relics, but I always think about it as a sort of change of focus. And I think what we're seeing in the 1970s with the reorganisation of the cathedral is that sort of change of focus coming out. So we're seeing a lot of new features. There's sort of redecoration of the interior. Yeah. And accompanying that is the burial of the relics. It's interesting because if you go to somewhere like France, for example, you don't see relics disappearing. You would find them still in the treasuries. But here, that decision is to sort of quietly bury them, but fascinatingly, with notes. And that suggests,
the provenance was really...
Well, absolutely, but, Father Kevin, I think he knew that these would be uncovered at some point, and he would have known that was actually a sort of general trend. So we mentioned this in the exhibition, actually. We have relics that are buried in the Middle Ages. Yeah. But when you bury your relics, you always put them in with a note saying, I, X monk, have put these in here, and you know, I've done this for this reason, and you know, that people are expecting things to turn up eventually. And I think Father Kevin, with his lotto tickets, which Trina could tell you about, you know, and his notes, I think those things are signs that he knew that at some point, probably not quite as soon as has occurred, but he knew that someone would be uncovering the relics at some point.
And of course, Kevin is someone, like Kevin died, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, about 6 months before the relics were recovered.
And he was a wonderful man, priest of our diocese, with a real sense of history. Like, he knew history from the inside and he loved it. He loved the stories. I remember a number of conversations with Kevin. He just told the stories about many things which were too easily forgotten. And Trina, you knew him.
Yeah, he used to visit all the time after I was appointed. And he was great. Like, I'd have a list of questions and I'd never get past the first one because he'd be off telling the story. He did a great impression of Bishop Joyce, who was one of the bishops here in Christchurch. But he just had a passion, but not just for history, but for outreach. Yeah. And he could never do that because he had tied up with his parish priest duties.
Yeah.
So we have a photo of him here in the exhibition, and you can see the twinkle in his eye, and I really do think he's looking down, smiling
at
what we've done.
I know, he was delighted to see what you'd done with the archives, because after the cathedral was destroyed, and then when it came down, and thanks be to God you were there to pick up the pieces, or literally. One of the things that's often asked about relics is, they're, you know, are they authentic? And I often think that, and I'm looking around the exhibition here, many of these saints were not just people who 500 years later surfaced in a history book, but they were known at the time they were alive as holy people, and in the weeks and months after their death, their remains were respected. So that means that I'll have to delete the stumbling. That means that these relics are authentic, because immediately, weeks after their death, their bodies were sacred and were preserved. I think of that. There's perhaps the oldest, is it, the relic of the True Cross?
Although we do have a relic of Mary Magdalene, but I think Chris gives a really clear historical overview of what we can trust.
Well, it's a complicated issue. So, as an historian, I think you come into this, and I would always say, really, from the later Middle Ages, I'm fairly certain of the chain of custody. So if we're talking about St. Thomas of Canterbury, or if we're talking about St. Francis of Assisi, and there are fragments from the bag of St. Francis here, and I would have very little doubt as an historian that that is what we are talking about, because it's a good chain of custody. And we can go much further back. There are saints like St. Cuthbert, whose body is in Durham Cathedral in Northern England, and we know that's the saint. There are other cases, though, where I could say, as an historian, that I'm absolutely certain that the person certainly lived. So St. George is a classic case. There are a lot of stories that accumulate around St. George. The dragon one is the classic one. But if we strip it all away, St. George is an early 4th century martyr, probably killed during the Roman Emperor Diocletian's persecution. He certainly lived. You know, he was a person. The question becomes, are the relics of St. George, though? And exactly as you say, people would have known him, people would have preserved the relics. But the question is, could we, this is the question I would ask as an historian, can we draw a very direct documented line? And I can do it for some things, but I can't do it for other things. And so, you know, as a scientist, as it were, which historians are supposed to be, I have to introduce an element of doubt. But at the same time, I would say, you know, ultimately it comes down to a question of faith, you know, and that brings us to things like the True Cross.
Yes.
The True Cross is uncovered by the Empress Helena in the 4th century. So there is
in
Jerusalem, there's no suggestion that there are fragments of it sort of uncovered before that, so we know the sort of date of that. Our earliest account is, off the top of my head, I think it's the mid-340s. They're talking about an event that happened 10 years previously. You wouldn't make that up. Why would you make it up? People were alive who knew that the Empress Helena had gone to Jerusalem. And so your question would become, well, is it the True Cross?
Yes. And of course, there's jokes made throughout history that there are enough pieces of the True Cross around to build an ark. But in fact, as I read here in one of the reflections, there's not. if you build it, you only get about a third of the cost if you add together all of the relics. Now, some of you may have noticed, maybe listeners didn't notice, that Trina's just dashed away, and now she's just arrived back, because there is a steady stream of people. As I look around, there's half a dozen people here at the moment. And actually, more interesting, as I look around, I would say the average age, there's no one in the room at the moment apart from ourselves who's over 40, I would say, almost. These are young people coming through, really. I'm interested. So get yourself to the exhibition. It only goes till the 10th. What's your favourite relic here, Chris?
For me, I think it's the True Cross. Actually, I think it's the True Cross because of the symbolism and because of what it meant to people. So I think the key issue for me is actually not whether it is authentic or not. As an historian, for me, it's what people believed about it, what they felt about it, its importance in society. So for me, it's absolutely central. It's symbolic of the Christian faith.
Okay. Trina, what's your favourite relic that's here? Because I know back at the archives in the diocese, there are so many.
No, my favourite relic is St. Patrick.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I have to say that. Because when we took the relics out of the jars, they were quite dusty and damaged. And so I had to clean them all. And one day I was having a tough day at work and I was thinking, I really don't belong in this job. And as I was cleaning the relic, uncovered that it was St. Patrick, and also St. Lawrence is in the same theca. And I thought, well, that is the Holy Spirit very much taking me.
Trina, what was your feeling at that moment when you realised you were holding a relic of St. Patrick?
That was phenomenal for me. And I always talk about relics as being connections. Bono in his book talks about prayer, where you're in a little boat being tossed around on the water and there's a rope guiding you to land, and every time you pray it pulls you closer. And I think that's what the relics are for me. They're those tethers that just bring you that bit closer.
Look, we were going to go for quite a bit longer. I think, Trina, you have to do some work. I think these people, do you think? You really need to make contact with them.
Sure.
Look, the purpose of this brief podcast is to let everyone know that until the 10th, Trina, can you just give us the address, where do people come to?
We're at the Pumanawa Gallery, which is upstairs in the Boys High School building, the Montreal end of the Arts Centre, up the main staircase, and we're in the gallery 10 o'clock in the morning until 5 p.m. Every day now until Saturday. We close Saturday afternoon.
Great. And one of the two of you will be here all the time.
Apart from the odd toilet break and coffee. I'll be here the whole time.
It's lunchtime now. Thanks. You need lunch. Chris and Trina, thank you very much.
Good question.